Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
It's the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
We got lucky. You've given me everything I needed. More than I could have hoped for. I needed to have this first. So I can say goodbye and still remember you. Still remember us.
Are you? What are you talking about?
After all, isn't this what we're fighting for? What we've always been fighting for. Answer the door, Greg.
Hello, it's the It's Got Star Trek podcast!
Ah! Ah!
Ah! All right, it's been a couple weeks.
It's been It's not been a while. Only one while.
Well, it's been a while.
It hasn't been the
one while.
It hasn't been the one and only while, but it has been one of a while.
But not two while.
Two whiles.
Are there units of while? I guess there's not really.
He
there's
said
one
unit.
While.
There's not units
Jesse,
of while.
He said unit.
There's sort of like
unit.
A local communal colloquial
are they,
justification
are those,
for
are
what
those,
a while is.
Are those units a member of that community?
Member.
That's like an old school term for penis that makes me
Nobody
uncomfortable.
Nobody says that.
Member.
You know, like dick doesn't make me uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Cock, tadger, wiener.
Tadger.
Nobody says tadger.
No, but like it's old, but I don't.
Tallywhacker.
Tallywhacker. I don't. Member, I don't like. Member
that's the silliest.
Member is like you reading Stephen King or something. And
yes,
like,
one
oh,
of his.
She touched,
oh, like one of his.
Touched his.
That's
member.
Like what an
oh, like,
alien.
One
I
his,
don't like that.
One of his like blackout sex moments, like where
yeah.
he's probably done amazing amount of like out or drank a bunch of booze and done a bunch of coke yeah. and written some weird sex stuff in his book.
Member.
And he's like, and he doesn't remember it, but he's reading it back. And he's like, hey, this is pretty wild.
Yeah. Right. I know. Like, as Stephen King, I imagine like actually sobering up and reading some of the stuff yeah. that after it's gotten published being like holy shit I wrote this.
It's like man the 80s was wild
and it's like okay well I guess I'm in it now I'll just keep going with it I
yeah
guess.
They keep paying me money.
Nobody's arrested me.
Yeah, so hello, welcome to the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
What if they are evil?
What if, is that referring to us?
Yes,
it could be
all three of
we're,
us.
We are dangerous
because there is good and there is evil.
Oh my god,
we're dangerous.
Yeah, the whole fucking good evil.
Yeah, I know.
Fucking oh nonsense. Anyway, we got to do the main bits first. So,
bits.
It's welcome to the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
Welcome. What if they are evil?
My name is Dan.
My name is Jesse.
The fraudulent name statements. Jesse saying his Dan. And
my name's Jesse.
My name
Dan
is Dan.
Hey,
Jesse.
I'm Jesse, and I like to do this. A wagga 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 wagga. I'm Jesse. When I go to the store, I like to buy thimbles, and I go wagga 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 wagga.
I buy wagga wagga thimbles.
Sorry, folks. We're a little out of practice here. Okay, this is episode 307 of the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And tonight, or today,
or whenever,
on this episode,
this morning,
whenever you're listening,
could be this morning,
whatever.
Next year.
This episode, we are going to be discussing, we're going to be concluding our coverage of Strange New Worlds Season 3.
Uh-oh.
And the conclusion is the finale episode, which
oh,
is
man.
Called New Worlds. Is it, wait, do I have this right? New Worlds, A New Civilization?
Nope, that's not it.
Oh, fuck, what is it called? Why am I, oh, no, that's what I've.
Something about civilization.
Okay, what is it? New
La
what?
La
new
new lives.
New lives?
Very fucking close. Just depluralize it.
New life and new civilization. What the fuck?
Okay, so what are we watching? What are we talking about?
This is ridiculous.
Wow, that's like even less, but it's part of the opening.
Why would I say new worlds and new civilizations? That's so stupid.
New lives? New worlds? Because it's strange new worlds. That's why.
New life and new civilizations.
The idea that good and evil exist, have always existed, is the most commonly shared belief. In all the galaxy.
In all the galaxy.
That certainly says it about this episode.
Yeah.
All right. So
we're going to get to that.
We'll get to all that, folks. This is
what are you boys talking about?
Well, we're talking about new life and new civilizations as it happens.
As ready as we'll ever be.
Yes. So just a couple of show notes. We did have a brief break because I had to go on a trip someplace. If you didn't listen.
Totally horsing around last week.
Yeah, give a listen. We put a couple of our Patreon episodes out, grouped them together, put that out last week for you all to enjoy. Took it out from behind the old Patreon vault and not really Star Trek related, but fun stuff. I think you will enjoy it. So definitely give that a listen.
11.
All right. Did you, by the way, and forgive me if you're saving it for later, but did you happen to get a clip of Pike laughing when Scotty came into the, you know, when Scotty was tricked in this episode into being wearing formal dress, you know, because that's the gag they pull as you go to the captain's party.
Right.
And then Pike had this kind of funny laugh.
Was it that one?
No, it wasn't that.
Was it?
No, I don't think it was that. You just have a bunch of Pike laugh files.
I do have a.
It's okay if you don't have it. It was just.
Wait, what was it? No, that was. That's a different one. That How about this one? No, I just played that one.
There's, what are you doing?
You know, that's funny that I would have missed that. Speaking of funny and laughter, that's...
I kind of figured you would have gotten it, because he's all like... Well, I mean, that's not a particular...
You sound like a...
Like George W. Bush.
You know, or Ben Stiller's impression of Tom Cruise, or whatever?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Okay, because I have, like, a bunch of laugh files, but I somehow missed that one. Maybe it's because it was so a weird laugh that I didn't even register, because, as you'll notice... Isn't even like a really good sound effect for.
It's more of a chortle.
But it's not even like. It's almost like, why did I even record such a piece of crap laughter sound file? But I did it because I try to record every time someone laughs. I try to get it recorded, so I'm.
Oh, I wasn't fully aware of that. Yeah. Is that one of your things?
That's nothing to sneeze at.
I never made it explicitly known, but like that's something that I've been trying to.
So folks should listen back to our catalog. Dan will occasionally provide detailed explanations about his system. And here's the thing. Of course, Dan has a system for all his sound clips. It's easy enough to assume that.
He's a real character. This
The system, like whatever assumptions you make about the system, whatever assumptions you make about Dan's system, good chance they're wrong.
Yep.
And his actual system is way more fascinating and interesting and intricate. And we, Jesse and I, frequently learn new things. Like I did not know that you had a specific thing about recording laughs. And we've discovered more and more over time about Dan's proprietary sound clip clipping system.
Yeah.
And organization.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cause that is an understatement.
Because whenever it's all where you're like talking about like, okay, we got to do two episodes this week, and you're like, well, listen, guys, wait a minute, don't you realize I have to do all this stuff?
And we never run out of the color brown.
And we never, I don't think we ever quite realize like what's involved and what you're talking about.
Yeah, because all of Patrick's like work goes into like
it's
after. Your work, Patrick, is based upon how long we record for has little bearing on the amount of work I do. Yes. The amount of work that I have to do is based upon the runtime of the episode
and the amusability. What's the metric for amusement? Is there a metric for amusement? Whatever the number of clips that may be amusing.
Yeah,
and the context or removal from the context that may make them more or less amusing or utilitarian.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yep.
Good. We're all on the same page here.
So I never do this, but I might actually go back after we record this and get that laugh because I'm so surprised at myself for missing it. none of those were the what you were talking about.
Yeah. All right. So we'll get moving right along here because we do want to discuss this this episode. But
yes,
we have a couple of voicemails, but one voicemail we have a voicemail from Steve, but I think we'll save that to the second break because
it can be done.
It sort of applies to this season and this episode, so we'll do that as a second break. Fun them up, but we do.
Okay.
We do first have a voicemail from our old pal, Fraser.
All right.
Yeah.
Hi, guys. It's Fraser here. I've got a little correctum up. In your last episode you released that was one of your Patreons, Bingo Bongo Crazy Macro, whatever it was.
Oh, yeah.
What's going on?
Joseph, I'm afraid to fucking goddamn cops. just a fire truck.
I didn't know where that was coming from.
You said stalactites. That's not even a word.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's stalactites or stalagmites.
Okay.
Damn it, dude. I think it was me.
I think you were talking about the ones on the ceiling.
Stalactites.
And those are stalactites.
Yeah. Stalactites.
And the reason, and the easy way to figure it out is...
Okay.
Stalactites has a C for ceiling. Stalagmites has a G for ground. That's how I remember it.
Huh.
But I've literally never heard anyone say stalactites. And my ear wrong. And so now you're all way smarter for it.
Yeah.
And you appreciate me more now. Thanks, guys. Can't wait for the next one.
Thanks, Agamemnon.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, I do believe that was probably my error. I'm guessing that was my error.
I knew the whole mite thing came from the bottom and the tight thing came from the top.
Yeah.
But I just
I didn't know it was that specific.
So I thought he was going to challenge. Yeah, I thought he was going to challenge us on that. But I didn't realize that when he said stalactites, I'd never thought about that versus stalactites. I would have been wrong as well.
I've always had a lazy pronunciation with most words. So.
What are you talking about?
Yes,
you know what I mean? I like when people go, you know what I mean? You know what I mean?
Yeah,
you know when they say that?
Yeah.
Like Jim Gaffigan, if you listen to any interviews with him, he's always going like, you know what I mean?
That's one of his voible crutches.
You know what I mean? Right. Instead of saying, you know what I mean, it's just like, you know what I mean?
All right, so let's keep things moving here with
Fraser.
Fraser does have a brief addendum to original voicemail.
Can't wait.
Hey, guys. I just realized I said the name Joseph, and that's none of your names. So maybe don't play that.
Oh, well, it's my middle name.
I don't really care.
Ah, see, Fraser, you didn't even know. That's,
it is my middle name.
That's Jesse's middle name. It's true. In the first voicemail, might not have caught it, but at one point he says, like, Joseph. It's okay, Fraser. You can call us whatever you
want. No harm, no foul.
We appreciate that. And yeah, it actually applies to Jesse as long as you're referring to Jesse Joseph.
Yes.
Jesse
Joseph. And not John Daniel.
Patrick Christopher.
Yes.
We're all doxed. We've been doxed.
Oh, no.
Oh, we're all doxed up the butt.
Sabotage.
All right.
Sabotage.
Thanks. Thanks again, Fraser.
Thanks,
that
Fraser.
Awesome.
Thanks for the edutainment.
We appreciate that.
Totally.
All right. So now let's get into another episode about genetics making you evil.
That siren really freaked me out because I couldn't tell if it was coming from here, and I was about to be like, Patrick, you want to pause it until that passes, and then it got so loud in the headphone, I was like, oh, this has got to be from them.
You think he's okay? What's going on?
Same thing happened to me when I first listened to the voicemail, and for folks who don't aren't aware, which I hope is everybody, I hope you all don't know where I live, but it's not that we don't hear sirens, but hearing a siren that loud would indicate there's an emergency like right next to my fucking house. We don't live we live in a very suburban environment.
We don't know where that fellow lives.
Yeah,
I mean, even when there has been like trucks nearby, like it's never quite that loud, just because of the proximity.
Yeah,
I guess, you know how
the geometry and
space and trigonometry
and the tree buffering,
a squared plus b squared.
If you live in a city, then it's a bit louder.
City,
like
Richmond.
Yeah, Richmond had some loud ass shit.
Yeah.
Okay, Star Trek podcast. Hello, Star Trek people. We're talking.
This is incredible.
My name is Danny.
To talking Danny. About nah, new life and new civilization.
New life crew.
New life. I don't want.
Ortegas didn't get much in this.
Your laugh.
Ortegas didn't get much in this episode, but it's okay because she already got her big moment before. So now it's all about Pike and Patel.
She just got to hang out and
gamble
scene.
For some reason.
Since you brought it up, I was going to save it for later. Since you brought it up, like a minor grievance in this episode, and this episode, there's ups and downs to this episode, but one thing that did rub me a little bit wrong was like to do the whole Spock and Kirk. You know,
I was like, call me Jim.
Well, it's Fucko. Like, no, a lot of that I really liked.
Call me Jim.
But it's like, okay, now Ortegas didn't get, like, Ortegas is good at flying, and they invented this whole thing where they're like, you got to do this, and this, and this, and then Scotty just throws in, by the way, he's like, and you can't do it manually.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, you have to do it manually.
Right.
You can't do it automatically. It's like, why not?
I know.
Okay.
Yeah. I didn't understand that either. Like,
I found it a little
angry. For some reason,
it was like he kept like making it up as he was going, or something.
Yeah. So, and then there was the whole thing. It's like Spock's
Spocko.
Scotty was saying. So, I guess first of all, here's a little bit of lore that we learned in the episode. A focused phaser blast from a starship is about half the power of the Earth's sun. The other piece of lore we learned is that I don't think this was stated in another episode. Vulcans can feel the coming of an earthquake.
That was interesting.
Is that new?
I also wasn't 100% sure.
But they live on a planet that's all seismic. And
I haven't recalled it before. Now, but those examples you provided are, and we can discuss in more detail later. This is a very unscientific episode.
Yes.
Where they just throw out a bunch of nonsense. Yeah. And I was like,
Like,
I don't mind a little magic in my Star Trek, but it was a lot.
This magic wasn't to try to jump from one point to the other. It was just like the whole thing. Yeah. It's like they replaced the plot with magic entirely.
Yes.
Instead of using it as a device to get from A to B.
And it wasn't just magic. It was like, let's do like lots of different magics.
It actually looked like magic cards.
Yeah. As opposed to the magics of Megatsu, which is one of the more excellent episodes of Star Trek, the animated series, where Kirk and Spock defend Satan against some Christian fundamentalists.
Yeah,
and then have a beer with him at the end.
It's nice.
It's nice. Nice. Wow, woo, it's very nice.
I love it.
What I was saying is they were talking about how in order their ships that blast, they needed the power of the Earth's sun to open the portal, and the ship's blast only gave it half. So they're like, well, let's do two. And then Spock was like, the phasers aren't additive. Mm-hmm. And Scotty was like, but they're complementary. And somehow that answered everything.
Somehow that was fascinating.
Somehow that was super fascinating. Yeah. And like,
that was weird.
The only thing that I can gather is they're complementary, so that somehow means that they have to fire it simultaneously. Because I never quite understood what the different.
I think it means they're additive.
Yeah. That's the thing is I never.
I think the waves add up like wave dynamics is complicated math, but they can cancel each other out or they can add.
Right. I was confused why they're not additive, but they're complementary meant anything at all. Like, to me, it sounded like nonsense because it's like, it sounds like the same thing. If they're different, I'm not gathering how you make it different. Like I said, the only from putting together the dialogue, to me, that must have just been their way of saying we have to do it simultaneously for some reason. But they didn't even say that. Yeah. So I was very confused about that whole thing.
There were certain aspects of this episode that I totally bought in a Star Trek kind of way, but then there were lots of other things that were just like,
The whole epigenetic whatever. Like, I think part of what annoyed me was it's not even the magic. It's that they use science terms, but then like what they're actually describing is magic or nonsense.
Right.
Doesn't make any sense.
Where it's like, if you're talking about mind meld or whatever, it's like, okay, whatever. You can say whatever you want. It's whatever. Yeah. That's cool. Although it's nice if there's some consistency, and sometimes a mind meld is one thing. Sometimes it's like, oh, we can fly a ship together temporarily. We're linked together.
Yeah.
Like what?
Just
to do this funny, weird plot where we fly around and do this thing that's sort of not necessary.
Yeah, so with the whole evil thing, they were talking about at the end, they were saying, So basically they're saying squishing different species together into one makes them more sensitive to detecting evil.
This was the Jinx. I wasn't buying this.
So
part.
Right. So
it was almost comical when she's like, yeah. You know, like when I was turning into a Gorn and so you got a magic flower and you also gave me some blood from the first officer.
So yeah. So she was saying like, because I have some-
You made me into a Marvel human.
And I'm a human.
Gorn humans, and she mentioned Illyrians. She was like, they're all capable of detecting evil in their own way. So by putting them together, we're like- extra capable of detecting evil.
And everybody else just doesn't know what
evil
is.
By the way, Dan, you explain that in a way that actually makes it make even more sense to me. It's still nonsense, but like I didn't even get that. But like you've now okay, I get what they were at least going for.
I get it, but I don't get it.
But like, it was right. So because the way they tried to scientify it is they were saying like, because evil predates everything, and everything in the galaxy naturally wants to fight as part of their natural defense. Mm. Part of our natural defense mechanism is not to just fight off like, you know, lions that are trying to eat us. We're trying to fend off evil. That's Darwinism.
It's fucked up.
Darwinism, yeah. Is evolution. We've all evolved to fight off evil. Like, and that was so fucking.
No.
And so,
but real quick, just to interject here with the anthropological perspective. Yeah. Again, misusing science, which was frustrating because Sam Kirk is an anthropologist of some sort, right? And I like his character; he's good. But then he makes this statement about, and then Spock also, and then also, what's his name? You know,
Corby.
Like, there's all these people making these statements that are variations on like. Like every culture thinks of like evil versus good. That's not true.
Yeah, right.
That is patently not true. Many cultures do not have these conceptions of darkness and evil or good.
Like, where did they get that line from?
It's a very Western perspective. It's not only by any means, but it is a very. This is written by some like white people from a.
Maybe it finally makes all the
and
sense.
It was frustrating.
Yeah. I can buy the, you know, there's ancient bad aliens.
Monsters
that you have to keep under wraps. And there's
dragons.
Some other kind of ancient entity that is keeping guard. I totally buy that. Yeah. But like the origin of evil, like.
Yeah, so Spock hypothesized that if the Vesdar are evil and they predated all known races, then it is possible that all races that came later might hold some genetic memory on how to combat them. So it's scientificifying this sort of concept of like good and evil. But, and then he says, so the secret to defeating evil is to take all known species in the universe and squish them together, right? Because didn't they say, like, so if you squish together humans and Gorns, and I guess she mentioned Illyrians, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, because she got a blood transfer from Una
to help her survive. Right. So if those three races are going to make her extra protected against evil, and since Corby said that everyone in the universe, like
ipso facto,
is trying to battle evil, that means all you have to do is take just every time you find a new species, combine it into like just put them together into this big soup, and then clone
a genetic slurry,
then clone like this super creature
you
that's
can combat
that,
evil.
Clone this super creature that's made up of all the species you've come across in the universe, and that's your protection against evil because it's super powerful. Because I mean, if it's good. There's going to be Gorn, Illyrians, and humans to protect more than just humans against evil, then all the species must be like some mega super awesome thing. Mm. And then,
bogus.
And then somehow, right. And then we see Batel goes, what if I got all of them, all the parts of every race that know how to fight the Vesdar in me? And maybe by coming together in one body, it's transforming me.
And what is
and
this?
He goes, and he goes, into what? She goes, some kind of protector.
And like, what does that mean? You we know how to fight evil? Like, that? Well, like we defeated evil? Yeah, humans defeated evil? Like,
I am the beholder.
When did this happen?
Like, well, she defeated evil by looking at Gamble and telling him that, like, she's basically said, I love more than you hate.
Yeah.
And then he dissolved and fell apart.
Well, that's how she did. Yeah. Totally.
That's the power of love.
And I even sort of buy Fire. That, but like the origins of evil stuff is nonsense.
No,
it was lazy narratively. Yeah. I use that term again, as I always like to note, we're not TV writers. We're not trying to tell people what to do.
But they were so
not
blatant.
A TV writer.
The problem was this really
an actual writer.
If you're going to use these tropes, okay, but use them for some narrative or right. or more philosophical purpose. This there was no point.
Yeah,
there was no real undergirding of anything. There's just a bunch of shit happened.
It's sort of like it's like I was saying. It's like use it to help you get from point A to point B or something.
To
like
make a point.
Like even if, like a little you know, Patrick, you complained about the Kes magic, but even that would be a little better if it's
you mean on Voyager.
Even on Voyager, but like this was more blatant because this was what the story was about. Is that there is evil and that the Vesda are evil and what I guess. Yeah, I don't know if they defeated evil or if they've just contained it for a while.
And
I don't know.
It's a culmination of the Battelle story arc, but it's still like it just sort of comes out of nowhere. You're like, oh, what the fuck? Okay, that's what this is all.
And it does
about.
Retroactively come across as fridging. You know the term fridging, which originally
it
meant,
sounds perverted.
The term comes is the idea. It's the idea that you introduce a character. Originally usually female, although later on it could also be LGBT characters.
Oh, I see.
You introduce a character that the audience will fall in love with and care about, but you're doing it for the purpose of killing that character so it can benefit a straight male character by giving them a challenge to overcome or sadness or whatever. Right. And
you will die.
I Skywalker.
We've mentioned it.
Now he's free to live.
You will die.
Another
franchise. You will die.
Wrong franchise.
This one was.
You will die.
That was from.
We should do It's Got Star Wars. Everyone would flip out.
Oh my God. Okay. Sorry. You're talking about fridging. I rudely interrupted you.
Yes. we've mentioned it before, specifically with Battelle, that we were worried that this might be the case. Yeah. And technically she didn't die. And she went on to some Marvel superhero purpose.
So Battelle put the Vesda in their original prison like a super long time ago.
Time travel.
And now
quantum mechanics.
And now she's just been waiting for them to escape. And through the power of reverso time, it's all possible because forward in time, she's going to go to previous in time.
I'm even buying that because
that's the standard reverse causality shit they're always talking about and stuff. Yeah. You know,
don't even think about it.
Yeah,
no, don't even worry.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with that. I mean, because whenever we're dealing with time travel plots, we're already accepting that it's weird and
it's ridiculous.
And so, but it's still fun. But it's still fun.
Yeah, that's still all fun.
It's fun if they're using it to either tell a grand fun yarn or to make a philosophical point or a moral point. That's what's lacking here because
I
mean
the future.
Okay, let me be fair. Maybe they are making a point, but if they are, it's a dumb point. If the point is love is more powerful than evil,
right,
that's not an interesting point.
No,
I'm sorry,
everybody knows that already.
Yeah,
I am filled with light you cannot vanquish.
That's a point.
The love I feel is brighter than your darkness.
That's when he fell apart.
That point can sustain like a song, maybe.
Yeah, right.
But not like a season long arc. And what's a real shame about it is I really like the Captain Battelle character.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
It was doomed in one sense in the first place because this is a prequel, we know what happens to Pike at least to some degree or another.
Right.
They found an interesting workaround to that.
I will say, and we'll talk about it more maybe in the next break, the whole inner light thing.
Yeah, that's what it was.
Very well done.
Yeah, exactly. That's
very well done. It's a bit of a shame that it was plopped in the middle of this bizarre, confusing,
I know.
Otherwise episode.
Right.
Some of these things where it really was like, was this well thought out? I mean, it wasn't. Let's just say it wasn't. Since we're recording this, a little bit after the season ended,
2 weeks later,
we've heard a lot from the community. We've heard from the producers.
What?
Like the producers straight up in an interview were like, we know it was like the writer's strike fucked us up a little bit. Don't worry, season 4 is much better. We had more time to like work on it. They even admitted what we started actually thinking about earlier in the season. We're like,
I don't know what happened.
It kind of felt like they weren't like, they didn't have like enough time. And I guess with the writer's strike and stuff, okay, we get it. Like, and as we say frequently, writing a TV show, producing a TV show is complicated shit. It's not going to always work out. That's true throughout all of Star Trek, and we're just some jabronis.
We're just some guys on a podcast.
Yeah, making some comments. But that being
challenging, schmellinging.
That being said, it's like, you know, just it's, the deal is there's some stuff fell down here. Throughout this season. And this episode in particular, this episode is not, in my book, it's not as bad as the What Is Starfleet episode, which I really, and I feel bad about it too, because I know some people really like that documentary episode.
This episode is kind of conflicting because there are parts I like about it, yeah.
Visually,
but
it was great.
The whole focus on the whole good and evil thing really pissed me off. Because in the past, talked about good and evil, and I was always a little bit lukewarm. I don't know. But this was straight up this is Star Trek. We found evil.
Yes.
And we're going to defeat evil. And it's like, wait, first of all, like, what? There's evil? And then second of all, it's like, how are you defeating evil? Technobabble.
Through a bunch of nonsense.
Some ley lines.
The ley lines. When they were like, ley lines, he was like, and that's a real thing. It's like, no, it is not.
And Spock was like, no.
Yes,
no.
I know. That was like a wink to the audience. Spock being like, uh-uh. No. It's not.
You got to wonder, did they write that in, or was Ethan Peck just like,
fuck that shit.
Anyway.
So fragile.
Yeah, again, it all comes down to what is the narrative utility? And here there is none, right? The story is not that interesting. It's confusing, convoluted. And we'll go through some of the particulars in the next two breaks. But unfortunate end in some ways. But also, as you said, Dan, some pretty cool stuff in there too.
Fascinating. Intriguing.
We need to take a break.
Speaking of breaks.
So we'll take a break. And then when we get back, we'll do voicemail from Steve.
Hey!
Continue to discuss Strange New Worlds, New Life, and New Civilizations. Josh. I got it. Be right back.
You will stay. Perfect time to leave.
And we're back.
Welcome back.
Doesn't make sense, but I think I need to be here.
Well, you've come to the right place.
It's actually also perfect time to stay.
There's a lot of sounds.
That was a lot of sounds.
Yeah, I marked a lot of sounds that were welcome back sounds, and I had too many, so I had to start playing some.
What do you think
Tetris.
Happened to all those people that poked their eyes out? Do you think like the Starfleet guys were like, "Here, we'll grow your eyes back," or do you think they were like, "You guys were stupid"?
Yeah,
that's the Star Trek philosophy. Who knows? Maybe in season four, new management.
It was pretty gruesome. He made all those people poke their eyes out. That was messed up. They're all like, my eyes out. His mask looked... Something about his mask...
It was stupid.
Yeah. Something about it, like, it didn't look worn in enough or something because it looked like it popped too much.
It was really silly.
It looked like a prop because
especially given how good the world building was. This was a positive of this episode.
They had arcologies. Yeah. Looked like arcologies.
And this was
like those big fucking buildings they were talking about them
looked
being
like some magic.
They were talking about some worship places of worship, but those were giant. Like, do you see how big the tall buildings were? Yeah. They were nothing in comparison to the fucking those big things.
Yeah, there were cities, and then there were like those big like polygons up in the air. Right.
This was literal world building and actual strange new worlds, which is one critique of the show, is that they don't go to enough actual strange new worlds. So I agree, the mask sort of
and the costumes
stood out.
The costumes they were wearing were quite cool,
except for the mask.
The mask. I feel like there's got to be a way it could have worked, because you look at like some of those Marvel movies, and some of those masks they have are pretty crazy, and some of them don't work, but some of them really do work. And you look at it, and you're like, that's ridiculous that works, but it does. And so I feel like there's a way they could have done something. Maybe that's why I think maybe it wasn't like worn in enough or something.
Part of it was that
it didn't blend well.
Part of it was, I think, part of it was this, going back to this whole evil versus good thing is kind of stupid. It makes for an uninteresting villain. And then the character, right? Gamble, again, another character is basically like sort of a fridge character. I said at the beginning of the season, I hope they're not introducing this character just to make us like him and then kill him, which is exactly what they did.
Okay, you asked for it.
But in Jesus Christ.
I forgot that one went on for a little while.
The episode...
You asked for it.
The episode where, the timey-wimey wibbly-wibblies with the cube episode... where Gamble gets in,
body
initially
of nine.
Poltergeisted, infected whatever, you know, what the devil does, gets inside.
Yeah, I get that now.
In that episode, him getting his eyes burned out, wrestling with fighting with this new creature inside of him and all that. That was really interesting and well acted and scary to watch. And the transition scary. The transition worked because in the same episode, we see our lovable character Gamble, who's all confident and excited to go on a away mission. And then he gets this horrible injury and he's wrestling with being scared and trying to be a good Starfleet officer. Then he's kind of the evil character starts to take over. That was really effective and impactful.
Those are very powerful.
It was earned, right? Mm-hmm. And then in earned. This episode,
and I'm not just talking about what your mom's buried in.
He just
fucked it up.
And here he just turns around, has a goofy ass mask, was right. Like, I'm scary.
I know.
I was like, no, you look like a jackass. Yeah. I'm sorry.
These things don't die easy, but when they do, they die screaming.
Yeah, I'm sorry. It didn't work.
Yeah.
For me, and a lot of that is the silliness of the good versus evil in the first place. Again, it's an uninteresting character.
Zeperez. His name was Zeperez or something.
To give another example. And
they were on Ba-dates. Wasn't it the Ba-date system?
Bobbity-boos.
I had trouble following a lot of this stuff. Yeah, it was just a but like, I wanted to
doesn't
give
make any sense.
A counter example is when we have in Deep Space Nine, you have the wormhole aliens that they're called the Prophets, and then you have the Paw Wraiths, right?
Yeah.
But the thing is the Paw Wraiths, while they're presented as being like fairly evil, they are not presented to as the concept of evil. They're shown as like the asshole aliens.
Right.
They got kicked out. They got put into alien prison by the other aliens who were like, these guys are dickheads and they're doing all sorts of dickheaded shit. So it made sense to be like, yeah, they were all put together and they've gotten all bitter and extra vengeful because they
can be done.
These other aliens are like, no, they're the concept of evil.
Right.
So they have no choice but to be evil. Right. There's no.
And picking up what you're laying down, Spockle.
There's no potential for redemption. And I'm sorry, I'm harping on it, but yeah, there's no actual narrative point to be made.
But that's important what you said right there. There's no opportunity for redemption because like that kind of sucks. Like that whole idea of like we've got this character. Mm-hmm. That's the definition of like one dimensional in the sense that like there's what's the challenge here? The challenge isn't trying to come to understand the thing because we've already established there's no redemption. There's no reason to understand it. It's just get rid of, erase it. And that's all there is to it. And that doesn't really feel like true, like what doesn't feel right.
It doesn't feel Star Trek-y.
And
another complaint people have had about multiple episodes this season, which I think is a valid complaint, is really in 2025, going to this well of your genetic makeup determines
right.
who you are, your personality, all this stuff.
Yeah.
And look, leave the specific date debate.
I have to do the things I'm supposed to do.
That's can be uncomfortable to be like, you've turned into a Vulcan and now you like think this way or whatever.
It's
like,
it's my destiny.
This was my destiny.
It's not only sort of problematic.
You turned into a Klingon and now
it's also
worms.
Not even what's true in the lore of Star Trek. And, so it's a weird thing that they've been doing in this. When you start having the binary concept of good and evil, right. It's like, wait,
what? And on the point of what you were saying about they are the embodiment of evil, not just like some fucked up thing.
Yeah.
Like the embodiment of evil. This starts to get into the territory of one thing I liked about Strange New Worlds, I think a lot of people liked about Strange New Worlds, is it wasn't these like catastrophes.
Discovery.
Exactly.
It was your local neighborhood Spider-Man.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Solving crime.
Exactly.
Stopping the ATM robbery.
And the only time that didn't really happen this season was mostly revolving around Spock's romantic relationships. Yeah. But like, this season turned into that, what was just another, because like let's face it, if you're talking about that you're meeting up with the very... Mm-hmm. Idea and concept of and instantiation of evil itself. Yeah. That is a universe. Like that is the universe at stake here.
Well, didn't Pelly Pelly had a line that was like, "It will rain down demons."
Right. Yeah, right.
What?
What about like the embodiment of good? What are they gonna deal with that?
Well,
you get Gary Mitchell eyes because you're
not joking.
I'm not joking, Lee.
Yeah, she was not joking. Lee.
So it was just, I really wanted to go back to like just more like you said. Oh, sorry, microphone. I got too worked up.
But microphone.
What you said is the plots are a little on the stakes are there and they're real, mm-hmm. but they're not like the end of the universe kind of shit. Like that just gets exhausting.
It's a lot of it is it's unearned, right?
Yeah.
I've repeated that phrase a couple times, but in a narrative, sometimes you have to use shortcuts, especially on TV, and that's fine. But if it serves a good purpose, then the audience will accept it. Other times you have to kind of earn it, build up something. Like, for example, if you want an evil character to be intimidating, we can think of a number of examples in Star Wars, Star Trek, lots of stories where you have to show them doing evil shit, you know?
Yeah.
Like in Die Hard, right, you see the bad guys do bad things in a certain order and in a certain way so that you take them seriously.
The Bethesda don't do anything other than look creepy and
look like creepy monsters.
Yeah, and then we're told that they're evil. We're told they're evil and they look scary
and they fly around.
Oh, they did like apparently take over Gamble and everything, but like, and they fought, but like there was nothing outright that made it seem like they had an agenda that there was no agenda.
The way you knew he was evil is that when Gamble was fully possessed, he was all like,
right, yeah. Yeah, so we never really knew what the agenda of the Vesda were, other than to just be evil. That's exactly. What it all comes back to. It doesn't matter their agenda, it doesn't matter their motivation, it doesn't matter anything, it doesn't matter trying to understand them. Nothing matters because they're evil. And so that just sort of throws away that whole
it's the worst kind of shortcut.
It just writes it all away. It's just they're evil. It's fine. You know, don't have to worry about any kind of detail.
Flourish of a pen is flourish of washed away.
Well, an example is, you know, if you're looking at Tolkien, right? Tolkien uses a lot of archetypes in order to tell his tales, and it works because the archetypes are complicated in the sense that he provides some level of motivation for his characters, right? He might even bandy about terms like evil and stuff, but whether you're talking about Sauron or Morgoth, they're not they're not like these creatures that are just like, they have a goal. Like Morgoth wants to dominate people. Sauron has an obsession with order. He's all about organizing order.
But all these things want to do is be evil, but we don't even get to see what that means.
Yeah, and exactly. And it's just uninteresting. Fundamentally, it's uninteresting, as opposed to when they're battling with the Klingons or the Romulans or the Borg, or even even when it's a more inscrutable species like in Voyager. What is that species 8675309?
Yeah,
I always forget which one. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah,
there, right?
I know what you're saying.
254.
But they made that. They still imbued that species with over time with some degrees of motivation and et cetera, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's cool, right? Take another example where we're supposed to think of something as just sort of patently evil is the slime monster that killed Tasha Yar.
Hmm.
Spoiler alert.
Mm-hmm.
Skin of Evil. That's like that episode is called Skin of Evil.
Yeah.
But even
human flesh.
In that case, there was still a moral tale that was being told. They were using that creature as a mechanism for character development and also to get rid of an actress. But like, you know, like there was purpose to it that made that story hold together.
And so the thing is, this story was supposed to somehow lead into Pike leading a separate life. So the way they work around him dying is they give him a full life, and then he comes back as like, I just lived a full life. So he does actually get to live a full life.
Well, he doesn't die. He just goes to that planet.
Okay. He lives a full life. He comes back to the thing, and now we know he's still gonna die. But it's all good because he got to live a full life. That's great. And so somehow this whole story was supposed to lead into that, but it didn't. It was very jarring when it sort of jumped into their new life, because you could
because it was just like, what the fuck?
Yeah, because they could have.
I guess that's a power she has now.
Right. So that's the thing is there was. None of this led to any character development, except the closest thing you could say that character development had led to was that what I just explained there. But you
nice
could
for Pike.
But you could have replaced that beginning part, all that, with something else, because the way it led into that future that sort of new life section of the show near the end, it was so jarring that it didn't even really lead into it. They could have come up with any reason for them to get to that scene. Yeah. So it's like they didn't even really need all that.
And at the end, I guess the implication is, again, it was confusing because when on my first watch through, I was like, okay, so she's doing this to help. She's doing it as a nice thing for Pike. She's like, she knows the deal with Pike. She's suddenly got this power, and like all magic power people who suddenly become superheroes, she knows how to use her superpowers exactly.
Right.
And her superpower is both fighting and containing evil ghost creatures.
I am the Beholder.
But she can also simulate a lifetime in a short period of time in her style.
It's a convoluted,
So she's got multiple things. But my first watch through, I was like, okay, she's just doing this as a nice favor to Pike before she has to leave him to stand sentry for all time. But then on my second watch through, I was like, oh, wait, I think, are they also saying that she, by doing that, she like developed enough love power, like a lifetime of love power. Like that's the impression I got on the second watch.
The love I feel is brighter than your darkness.
That's how she defeated him.
Well, because right before that line, she's like, "You've given me this gift of," but it's like, wait, but did the evil people didn't give you the gift? The Gorn and the flower and the Allurian genes gave you the gift. But then, like, the epigenetic reaction
I guess I can see that, where it's like they live this extra life, and them living that life is what gave her the power to defeat the thing.
Gave her love juice.
Love juice, defeat the thing in the end. Like, I guess you could say it kind of tied together, but it's just kind of... But it was convoluted, and it was kind of cheesy, and like...
Yeah, man.
You know.
And it is a real shame, because that actual section, I even the second time, even with my aggravations of the episode, I still, like, teared up during that session.
It was,
I thought it was very well acted, very well directed. The transitions were interesting. The knocking on the door was...
I want to perform a short work for you.
Oh, okay.
It's called Knock Knock Knockin' on Pike and Battelle's Door. Okay, here it goes.
And Dan, so everyone knows, Dan will be performing this and other works at the Kennedy Center.
Knock, knock, knocking on Pike and Battelle's door.
Not the Kennedy
Center. Yeah, it's under new management, and they've invited Dan.
Oh, no.
Danny Long. It's called A Night with Danny Longclip.
That's right.
In Washington, D.C.
Yep.
Yep. We'll get back to that conversation in a second, but let's take
quick before we move on.
Yeah.
And I said this in every time this happens in a movie or show, like, being the fucking protector has got to be so fucking boring.
Yeah.
Like in Indiana Jones, you know?
Right,
you know,
that guy. Yeah.
Although we're not even sure if she's conscious, as she's like a weird statue-like creature. Hopefully she's not conscious.
That guy in Indiana Jones was just chilling there for centuries.
He was bored out of his fucking mind.
They don't even get a magazine or something. Like, you know, like, but like she seemed to be taking the whole thing pretty well. Meanwhile, at the end, Pike's like sad because he's like, well, I lost my girlfriend and like I already lived my life, which was fucked up. I'm trying to deal with that weird trauma of having lived a life. Oh, and by the way, I still got this thing to look forward to that I thought... The fucked up thing is, in his other life, he thought he defeated that thing. Right? And he's like, no, I woke up from a dream.
I still get to be turned into a, you know, I don't know. I was about to say turned into a monster. That's a fucked up thing to say. He saved a bunch of lives.
Yeah.
And was injured as a result. And that's... unfortunate.
Yeah.
And it is an interesting aspect of this the character of Pike.
The knocking was interesting. There was one part that, like, near the end knocks where it's like he heard the knock, but like
she's trying to distract him.
Thanksgiving he heard a knock and he heard it, but she didn't hear it.
Well, because it was the daughter coming.
No. There was a point that there was that.
Oh,
knock.
After that,
there was a knock, and he was like, "Huh? Did you hear that?" And she's like, "Come back to me, Chris."
Well, I thought she heard it, but she was trying to get him to. She was trying to keep him in the illusion.
I thought that I thought he said, like, "Did you hear that?"
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, 100%. But
and she was like, "No," or something.
I particularly on the second watch through, I noticed that that was her. Like, the illusion was starting to break because they were, you know.
That's so she's trying to hold it.
She's
together.
She's like trying to like yeah get him back.
And
into
the whole
it
comet
too.
Thing, like he saw the comet and in the thing, and then at the end meteor he saw whatever.
Yeah. We're gonna get letters.
Yeah, I know. Feedback. You're right. It's my fault. There was the flying thing when they were in this other life, but then he saw it again, like at the end of the episode, mm-hmm. which I guess was supposed to mean something.
That, and there you go. There's some narrative connectiveness and
I mean,
connective
like,
tissue.
Like, okay, like it's bad enough to lose your partner, but like he had like a whole life, and like there was like a daughter and a dog and shit, mm-hmm. and like
yeah, he lost the
and,
daughter.
And there's no, they're
lost,
not
lost all the dogs.
They're not there anymore.
Yeah,
like what the hell? Like,
yeah, and again, there wasn't an opportunity to sort of interrogate the meaning of this, because it look in the inner light, which there's a similarity here to the inner light and to Hard Time with O'Brien being put in jail for 20 years.
That was a hard
right?
episode.
Oh man.
So the inner light.
Fuck off.
The inner light, they were using the sci-fi concept to interrogate a lot of interesting ideas, and that episode, because it was focused on that, there was some space to think about that, even though at the end Picard is all like he's playing his flute and it's like, oh, what, I wonder what it's like to think about having this whole
more
life.
Of a whistle than a flute.
Well, okay, yeah. Yes, you're correct,
like
you're
a
right
tin whistle.
100% correct. I apologize,
I don't get it.
But in that episode, it was defined as an alien thing with a specific purpose. And so while Picard now has to wrestle with exactly how he's going to incorporate that life into his memories, and it comes up a few other times in his life, mm-hmm. The main point is concluded, right? We're like, yes, some aliens did this shit to him, whatever.
Right,
okay.
Right.
In Hard Time, one of the great things about that is at the end of the Deep Space Nine episode where O'Brien has had inserted into his head all this 20 years worth of living in a prison.
Chief O'Brien!
And a bunch of trauma related to that. They specifically state that they can't like cure him and he's got to deal with it. Now, they don't really follow up on it much in Deep Space Nine, but at least there's the implication there. This episode didn't really give us a lot, unfortunately, to think about the implications of both the positive and negative aspects. This is an interesting gray area, particularly as Jesse pointed out that he on the one hand, yes, he got a chance to live a life beyond mm-hmm. his accident. He also got to live a life with Batel, who he clearly really cared for, mm-hmm. and this was an opportunity for him.
I'm still alive.
For him to have some version of this that was real, right? That's again, they didn't really get to get into the debate. They make a few statements, but there's no real debate about the value of memory versus reality and illusion and all that other stuff. But then there, yes, Jesse's right. He has a daughter that never exists and never will exist.
Wait, you mean this one?
My job is great.
She works at the Daystrom Institute.
My job is great.
Yeah.
My job is great.
And I want to hear more about that.
A son-in-law?
That's interesting. It's like interesting
from,
to think about that stuff.
Why was she
from
so
Robert April?
Yeah. Why was she so exasperated with her dad because he didn't tell her mom?
She said not to tell. She said don't tell mom. He didn't tell mom. And then
she got exasperated.
It was a ridiculous
unless we're supposed to think that Pike was like getting forgetful in his age.
No,
she didn't
actually.
He wasn't even that old.
She teased him. Yeah, she was like, but you always don't. You always tell mom.
Human flesh.
Wait, before we go on, can we play a quick game of name that fake out knock? Because as you briefly sort of almost alluded to in that knocking session,
briefly sort of
there was one knock that was a fake out knock.
Fake out.
Because it wasn't the actual like
fake
narrative
out.
Knock. Mm-hmm. It was a real knock.
All right.
No,
that's going to be the fake out knock.
All right. So we have to identify Jesse. I think I've got this.
Okay.
I think I understand. And I hope you do,
which
too,
is the
because
non,
you're going to be playing this too.
Which is the non-meta-narrative knocker. Is that what you call it?
I like know. That. That's a good name for this game. Which is the non-meta-narrative knock?
Yeah.
Perfect.
Name that non-meta-narrative knock.
Okay.
Choice one. That's one. Choice two. There's gonna be four. Choice three. Choice four.
I've got my choice. You got your choice, Jesse?
What? What am I? What am I choosing?
I knew it.
All right. How about this, Dan?
Do you remember in the session, in that life session, how there was those knocks at the door?
Yes.
And did you remember how one of those knocks wasn't a real knock? It was a real knock. When the others were just like, remember how through that session they kept knocking on the door?
Yeah.
Right.
He's saying, yeah, but I don't think you mean.
Yeah. Do you understand?
No, yeah.
Yeah. But do you remember that one of those times it was actually literally
in the reality, it was perception.
It was the dude with no eyes.
Yeah, but one of those times it was actually the daughter knocking because it was Thanksgiving dinner.
Right, when she came to Thanksgiving. Yes.
Right, and that will be called the fake out knock because that is the only real knock in that scene. So you have to guess which of these is the fake out knock. I'm gonna play them quick. Here's one. Two. Three. Four. This is such a dumb game.
Two.
All right, so here's the deal.
It's not a trick.
I know. I also agree it's two, but I wanted to provide some context,
just
some flavor,
of the music.
Some podcast flavor. So Jesse says for music, I argue that it's two because of those three knocks. That's the one that feels most like somebody knocking. The other ones are performative knocking. Mm-hmm. Two feels the least performative. I don't know if that's correct. Yeah. It just two feels like the least performative knock. Like somebody's like, I'm just going to go knock on this door for the purpose of indicating to the inhabitants inside the building that I'm here. I've arrived. Whereas those other knocks are more like I'm a creepy monster with using some weird knocking
like,
cadence.
I'm the cops.
So this is the one you chose.
Yeah.
Now I'm going to play the real one, okay. Which could be this one.
Could or be could, that one.
Or could be any one.
Yeah.
We'll find out. So all this right. is what you chose.
Yeah.
And this is the actual fake knock. It was the first one.
Really?
Yeah.
The first one. That's weird.
So I'm going to play them in order. First, that's the fake out.
Okay, who knocks like that? Who knocks like that? A fucking monster.
Interesting.
Yeah, it was this one.
That's really scary. All this knocking is frightening.
It was freaking me out because it was in stereo. It was like coming out of the left speaker. Because
you all live by yourself and there's just some cats and you're just like, what the fuck?
Yeah, and the speaker was kind of near like a door and I was like, oh no, there's someone going to get me.
Yeah,
in the
scary door.
It was a scary. I still get freaked out by like closed shower curtains and scary doors and stuff.
All right.
I'm a child.
Real quick before, because we got to go to break soon, but I did want to play the voicemail from Steve.
We're still on the front matter.
Steve.
So quick voicemail. Steve just got a couple of, as he puts it, he's like, a couple of bad.
I don't know what happened.
Bad theories about Kirk and Spock. So let's hear from Steve.
Gentlemen, Steve here.
Hi.
And after my stellar prediction about Battelle's fate, I thought I would add some theories about Spock and Kirk's relationship. In the Salat Who Ate His Tail, I'm thinking that Spock noticed like how obsessed Kirk was with beating his captain at chess, and I was thinking, you know, maybe he felt he had to support the fragile human male ego. And actually, for all these years, he has been letting Kirk beat him in chess. In addition, I mean, I was thinking, you know, how you had the mind meld and this whole story about Kirk's experience on the second moon of Orion. And the way Spock sort of talked about it, it seemed like he's like a little into that. I think Kirk maybe had a three-way.
Intriguing.
And Spock, having seen that in the mind meld, said, hey, I like that.
Philana's on
so
it.
So they're sort of going to like split the baby with all the slash fiction people, you know, desperately. There are people who desperately want Spock and Kirk to be gay, but they have like, you know, a three-way with Lon and then she gets killed. Then they have this connection together, but, you know, the old guy thing that ain't gay if it's three-way.
It ain't gay if it's three-way.
Unfortunately, to get two needles with one thread or whatever. I mean, I don't know the idiom. But, hey, thanks for all the good content. Look forward to your next show. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Agamus.
Thanks, Steve.
Just a crazy idea.
Thanks, Steve. No, you got the idiom right. It's two needles through one thread.
He said he was talking about splitting the baby and then slash fiction, and then I just thought about
You're just talking about slicing babies up?
Yeah, that's where my brain went, which
Dan, you're hilarious.
I'm so funny.
So fragile.
Wait, Leon dies?
No, he was suggesting that... And
we don't know Leon.
Well, so the point, I think the point Steve was making is that in order to do some fan service, but not true fan service, they might, you know, split the difference, I think is the idiom he was going for, and create a scenario where Kirk and Spock can, you know, they can be like tugging around a little bit, but they're like, as long as there's a lady involved, it's not, it's not gay. That's why he was making the point about that.
So fragile.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
I get what he's saying, and I'm about to, like, you know, take it out of context because I'm going to make a serious point about the whole Spock and Kirk playing chess thing.
Oh, yeah.
Is that I know he wasn't specifically going for this, but I always liked, and I guess this is why I'm probably not the only one, but like I always liked how, you know, Kirk was better than Spock at chess because Spock is so superior in every way that this is just one way to show that, like, you know, like, Kirk's not only just like a really smart dude,
totally agree.
But like, just
I think
chess is a human game.
Well,
checkmate.
The idea that a computer at the time in the 60s would be, you know, when this was originally revealed that, you know, because Spock was, I mean, Kirk was always beating Spock.
I mean, for all of Spock's logic and superiority, it's like old, but there is some sort of like undercurrent that exists.
And that's the narrative point of that. Yeah. Dan has it exactly right. Because in TOS, not always afterwards, but in TOS, the idea was always to present Spock and McCoy as the extremes of human intellect and emotion.
Checkmate.
And Kirk being the where you can take those things and combine them. And you don't have to agree with that point, but that is certainly the philosophy that was being put forward, and I tend to agree with it.
Yeah, I do.
That you need... Whoa. Having access to both is the way to go. Mm-hmm. But I'm curious about this. I know it was just played for a joke, the whole like, Kirk got up to some crazy stuff on Orion. It was a cute joke. My guess is that in the 23rd century, probably like a three-way is not enough for Kirk to be all like, by the way, you know what I'm saying? Like, he was probably like getting up to some other more bizarre and peculiar stuff.
Lots of
I'm not big on intimacy.
You know, I'm not, I don't have anything particularly wrong with, against intimacy. I'm all about intimacy. Yeah. You know, I'm an intimate kind of guy. You all know this from hanging out one-on-one with me. I get a little too
one-on-one.
Intimate.
One-on-one. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're not even joking.
I would, I'm not even.
Oh, I'm not joking, Lee.
There we go.
Yeah. It took me a minute. But like that whole mind meld thing, I might have said this before, but it freaks me out too much. Like I would share my used socks with somebody else before I would let them mind meld.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like I like
dancing lessons.
Like I would let people, like, you know, like look at weird parts of my body in very analytical ways, and then like draw pictures of it so I could look at them later. I would let
so
them
you could look at them later.
So I could look at them later,
and then before I would let them mind meld with
how
me.
Much later.
All right. Well, how about this?
No, mind melding sounds like horrifying. Like, I don't want people. Everyone's got thoughts that nobody should know about.
That's true.
And we're all on board with that particular thought, Dan.
Dark thoughts.
My job is great.
Thanks, Steve, as always.
Thanks, Steve.
You really made us think, Steve.
We need to take a
thanks,
break.
Agamus.
We're going to talk about sexy sexy Spock and Kirk and all sorts of other stuff during the break. But when we come back, we will conclude our discussion of New Life and New Civilizations. Be right back.
We sent Advance the demon back to hell.
What?
And we're back.
Captain on the bridge, let's light this candle.
We are... both ready.
They're both ready.
They're both ready. I was thinking about the how, like, when you put the different species together, like, their evil battling powers are additive, unlike the phasers, which are complementary. Those are complementary. These are additive. So that's kind of like if you had three species that liked rotisserie chicken, and if you squish them all together, suddenly they love rotisserie chicken more than any other species in the galaxy. Is that how it works? Like, it's additive like
Do
that.
Do they like cranberry sauce?
Cranberry?
I don't know. It's cranberry.
Nobody eats cranberry with rotisserie chicken.
But you could. But if you went to like, what if you went to like Boston Market or something?
No, you'd eat it with like a turkey.
You remember when Boston Market...
I don't
Market,
even like fucking cranberry Boston sauce. Market was cranberry called, sauce is gross.
It was called Boston Chicken.
It's questionable.
I do remember that.
And then they were like, we serve more than chicken.
I used to get their chicken and it was good, but it was greasy and it would give me some kind of gas issues later.
I never really went there.
And it's funny because like people always talk about how Taco Bell is like, oh my God, I ate Taco Bell. Now I'm going to the bathroom all day. I never had that problem.
That's nonsense.
I've never had that problem.
That's racism is what it is.
Yeah, I've never had that problem. But I have had that problem with, it wasn't Boston Market. It was Chicken Out. I think it was Chicken Out. Which is like basically like a Boston
Don't chicken. Even know what Chicken Out is.
It's like Boston Chicken. It's the same thing.
All right.
But different company.
With better sides.
It's just imagine the size, what you get at Boston Chicken. It's the same shit. Just a little greasier.
All right. So, welcome back.
Folks. More mashed sweet potatoes.
So I don't want to get anyone's hopes up.
About duties or no duties?
Well, there is one.
Okay.
Yeah. There's also a that's an order. But I had a list, and the list is not very interesting, once again, as per usual. I mean,
that's usually how you describe your list.
Listen, now, man, they're always interesting.
Now, this list is just sort of a narrative deconstruction of the door knocking sequence, which we don't really need to
so
go over that.
So that description makes it sound pretty interesting.
I know. I think I made it sound more interesting.
It sounds all academic.
I know. I did. I think I gave it a little bit too much credit in the description. But what I do have,
a little of this, a little of that.
It's basically just sort of. It's just sort of like, you know, going through that whole thing. It's not interesting. But I do have a little game we can play.
Okay.
Which is kind of like a list in game form.
You could have led with that.
I've been playing a game this whole
time. Well, I just thought I'd let you all down. I'd be like, there's good news and there's bad news, and you're like, the bad news first. And I'm like, I got a list, but it sucks. Well, what's the good list? What's the good news? I got another thing that's not a list, but we can pretend it's a list.
Okay.
And it might suck, but it might be cool.
I've got a little game.
I'm confused by the concept of pretending it's a list.
You'll get it.
Okay.
It's called Is It Though?
All right.
That's what the game is called.
Okay.
All right. So I'm gonna take these quotes.
Okay.
And we're gonna decide if it is though. So Corby says, the idea that good and evil exist have always existed is the most commonly shared belief in all the galaxy. Is it, though?
I mean, as I said earlier, if you're expecting a non-rhetorical answer, no.
Yeah.
I mean, look, I know somebody might debate and be like, he says it's not everybody, it's the most common. We don't know that. You can assert that, I suppose. No thanks.
Yeah.
Come on.
Nah, I'm right. With you. Okay. Right.
So is this how this game works? We just respond? All right. So far I'm enjoying this. Let's do this every week.
Okay.
But is it though?
Okay, number two. Gamble says, it's not just about you. It's about us. I'm going to start over. I'm glad you guys are having a good time. You're having such a great time that I got distracted, which is not a complaint. That's okay. I'm happy that right. This is happening.
I mean, you look real fucking happy.
Okay, number two, Gamble says, it's not just about you. It's about us. It's about duality. Is it, though?
No. So here's the thing.
Yeah.
Again, so they've asserted what a sort of a pseudo philosophical principle, right?
Yeah.
They've brought up this concept of duality. The word duality means many different things, and in some
it's about duality.
In some contexts, it can refer to what can potentially be the very interesting notion about a single entity containing multitudes or binaries. Multitudes would be more interesting than binaries. A duality is sort of boring.
Mm-hmm.
So is it though? No, in my view. I don't know. Jesse, what do you think?
Yeah, I think I tend to agree.
Yeah, I agree with that. Number three, in reference to Battelle's crazy new galaxy eyes, Chapel says, this is incredible. Is it though?
Well, okay. I think it is. Because that's pretty cool looking.
My issue with the
I don't understand what the fucking point is.
Yeah,
but
my issue with the chapel or not the chapel eyes. Chapel says the thing.
Battelle's galaxy eyes.
Yeah, she's got Gary Mitchell eyes, which it right. should be a song, right? We had that great song about Gary Mitchell.
Gary Mitchell.
That AI song was actually right. good.
Yeah,
oh, man. Yeah, go listen. I think we release that publicly.
It was a country song.
Yeah. I agree though that if that happened to one of you right now,
it's incredible.
It is incredible.
In the context of the narrative, it's incredible. The meta aspect of giving Battelle Gary Mitchell eyes, but she's not Gary Mitchell, and they didn't cross the galactic barrier. And is it just shortcut for like Star Trek people who a human who gets magic powers like Gary Mitchell kind of did.
Maybe.
But except it's in a totally different context. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
But is it though?
Fan service. I liked how they looked.
It looked cool. Yeah.
I didn't that understand did, from a yeah. fan service perspective. I was like, why are you making a reference to Gary Mitchell when this has no connection to Gary Mitchell and this happens before Gary Mitchell? Anyway, that's my piece. It is incredible, but mentally, no thanks.
All right. Number four, Gamble says, these things don't die easy, but when they do, they die screaming. Do they, though?
There's a variation on the is it, though.
It is.
It's a do they, though.
It's a do they. Is that the tense? Not the tense.
Well, we don't have any.
What is it called? Is it the tense?
We don't know. We don't know if they do because I'm not familiar with that entity.
He's asserted it.
This is the first time we've ever seen this fucking beholder.
That's a good point. We never get to see it.
Or did we see it in the other episode?
No, I don't. We didn't really.
No.
No. Okay.
No.
We didn't see anyone die screaming. Nope. We saw people poke their eyes screaming, but not die screaming. So this is a perfect example.
Not the beholder. We sure did.
Because in the previous episode, it was already Battelle.
This is a perfect example of them telling us and not showing us like how to feel about something.
And he's an unreliable narrator anyway because he's a ghost monster. He's a scary. Dementor or like the movie Ghost.
Not quite like the movie Ghost.
No, but there's that scene in the movie Ghost where there's like swirly black creatures.
And there's that dude in the subway. Isn't there some dude in the subway?
There's the dude in the subway.
Yeah. Yep. So yeah. Okay. Number five. This is referring to Battelle being the beholder. Pike says, it doesn't make any sense. And Battelle says, maybe it does. Maybe it finally makes all the sense in the world. Does it though?
Does it though? Another variation. No. I laughed out loud at that shit. I'm sorry. That was, and she tried her best to say that line, but man,
I bet it took a couple of takes because they probably busted out.
Probably. Well, and by the way, since we're on the beholder topic, the beholder. I don't know if they know what that means because to behold something means to apprehend it, and not apprehend as in like imprisoned. Like, did they look up at the thesaurus and get all the words like the wrong definition of the words? Because like apprehend can mean both to capture, but it also means to understand.
Maybe it's
right.
Maybe it's because she beholding those. Yeah. Those
to behold means to like view something to apprehend to understand.
Well, maybe it's like it's like she beholding those Vesda in place.
Oh, okay. That's hilarious. Thank you. Took me a moment, but yes, I get it now. Thanks.
But that's probably not what they were going for.
Probably not what they were going for, but a good pun. Yeah.
maybe it finally makes all the sense in the world.
Maybe finally.
But, okay, but maybe
this,
not.
This thing about that we are, again, maybe sort not, of baby. Expositionally, we're told that she had all these concerns this whole season when it's like, I guess technically they were there, but she's like, you know, Pike, how I've been complaining that I just don't feel right any place. And it's like, well, were you really? Maybe. This is kind of news to us. Anyway.
Yeah.
All you have to do is look up at the stars.
There's three more. Okay. This is, again, in reference to being the beholder. Battelle says, it's my destiny. Is it though? Back at the original.
Yeah.
I guess it is. But that depends on what you mean by your feelings on destiny, I guess. Now, of course, though, this whole thing is predicated on the whole concept of Pike seeing the future and us knowing that something happened later on. Yeah. So in that sense, is cause before effect imply destiny? And that's the whole question that everyone's always
wondering. Destiny thing is just as aggravating as the good versus evil thing. Right?
Yeah.
Where it's like, what are you trying to state by saying somebody has a destiny? Yeah, I agree with you, Dan. It's like, okay, if you mean like the timeline is supposed to unfold in a certain way, and I found out about it, so yeah, okay, I guess that's a version of destiny, but I don't know.
You say that like it's a bad thing.
Yeah, you are my density.
Thought we said no gifts.
We said no gifts.
No gifts.
Thought we said no gifts.
Again.
My job is great.
All of that was very charming. Sad that it was sandwiched in between some goofiness.
It's tradition.
All right, what do we have? One more? Two more?
Two more.
By the way, I do enjoy this. Mm-hmm. I hope we do a version of this again if it's appropriate.
If it's appropriate.
Yeah.
Right. But is it, though?
Man, what a good podcast. That's a good one. That's a good podcast, guys.
Well done.
It's been a couple of weeks, but this is a good one.
I did everything exactly as I was supposed to.
So number seven, Spock says, "What do you know of the Vulcan mind meld?" James Kirk says, "Heh. I mean, frankly, about as much as I want to."
Right. I didn't understand what that meant.
I think that just meant nothing.
"I'm not big on intimacy without someone knowing every single one of my thoughts. Is he, though, not?"
Yeah. I guess.
Maybe.
I mean, he's a complicated guy, that Kirk.
I mean, it's part of what's uninteresting about that point is, as Dan was saying earlier, I think almost everyone would agree. It's not like Kirk was like saying something unusual. Like the idea of like somebody in an instant knowing all of your deepest thoughts, even thoughts that you've hidden from yourself.
But he makes a point. He makes a point to say... He makes a point to specifically say, "I'm not big on intimacy." So he's making it seem as if, like, I'm particularly not into intimacy.
He's added that clause, but it's unnecessary for... And again, I apologize. I don't want to make the same mistake of speaking from a human perspective and from a Western perspective in terms of notions of privacy and all that other stuff, which I may be doing. But I get the impression that it's probably a pretty common thing to be like, "I don't know about this whole mind meld thing." Mm-hmm. I'm sure it's a spectrum of how much people care or don't care.
"My mind to your mind. My thoughts to your thoughts."
Like the violin at the beginning is like...
And real quick...
Kind of sounded like Batman Begins, though.
Or like Star Trek 2 or something. But anyway, since we mentioned the mind meld thing...
Rotation locked.
I briefly wanted to get your guys' opinions. What did you think about this? Because online, some people are like, "Oh yeah, whatever, this is cool. It's a fun way to start..." like or cement their budding friendship. Other people...
What about that "Call Me Jim" thing?
Well, I mean...
I thought it was fine. I like that. I mean, earlier in the episode, I was saying something about that, but I didn't have a problem with him saying, like, "Call Me Jim." It's like, okay, no, origin story, sure.
I don't think that's a problem. I think specifically the mind meld. So, like...
That's how they got started. Okay,
because here's the counterpoint. The counterpoint, which I think
I get that now.
I'll start by stating, like, I didn't necessarily mind this mind meld, but the point that some people have made online is that they thought it might, in fact, cheapen the relationship between Kirk and Spock that we see in TOS and beyond.
It seems synthetic.
Well, because
they didn't really get to naturally know each other.
The assumption has always been is that that's a relationship that's forged out of shared adventure.
Right.
Now, my counterpoint to the counterpoint is them having a mind meld does not negate the fact that they've already had some shared adventures and presumably will have more shared adventures prior to TOS. So it doesn't like eliminate the idea of shared adventures. It's just inserting this sort of extra layer of intimacy that I do understand why some people might prefer not to have that, but what do you think?
And they might have a three-way with Leon.
And they might have a three-way with, who knows, all sorts of people. Because this is
I'm picking up what you're laying down, Spuckle.
It's become the love boat.
You know, Wrath of Khan really did an amazing job of showing us how close Kirk and Spock really are, like, because you always knew they were buds in the show, but like it really wasn't until that movie that you really got to see the depth of like how much they really care for each other.
It's a brilliant movie, and not just a brilliant Star Trek movie. It's a great movie.
Okay, last one. Pike says, "There's no radiation leak, no explosion, no accident." Patel says, "You say that like it's a bad thing." Pike says, "I wasn't supposed to avoid this. There could be huge consequences. This was my destiny." And Patel says, "Maybe it's not anymore." Is it, though?
Well, it still is.
No, it still is.
It still is.
It is.
They didn't really interrogate that so much, but he's going right back. He's like, "Okay, I have my daughter never existed. the love of my life is dead, and I loved her even more because we had this wonderful life together. All my dogs are dead."
Oh, no.
It probably lost a lot of horses along the way, too.
Yeah, horses, too.
I like when he does the dogs as this.
Speaking of Spocko, I was looking online. Somebody was
Spocko.
Somebody mentioned that I think Kirk calls Spock Spocko in a piece of the action.
Holograms?
Which we discussed eons ago.
Yeah. Egon Spanglers ago.
Piece of the action. That's a fun episode. That's a good episode of Star Trek. You gotta love that Star Trek show.
Maps of the stars.
Human flesh.
Perfect synchronicity.
Did we answer your question? I think we did, right? The last one.
But yeah, It is, though. Yeah.
Maps of the stars.
Human flesh.
Perfect synchronicity.
So, maps of the stars.
Human flesh.
Perfect synchronicity.
Why don't we...
Do we got a duty?
Do a duty or no duty.
Yep. There's a that's an order as well.
And a that's an order.
Let's start with the that's an order. Okay. Get that out of the way. I get a little tedious sometimes. Do them anyway.
Dana's the consummate performer. Rule number one, just so you know, audience, tonight we're feeling a little tired. It's not going to be a good one. It's not going to be a good one.
Always,
yeah, help us out.
Downplay everything you're going to do. Like it's the worst.
You're like negging yourself.
Okay. M'Banga goes, we don't need to risk all of us. I can find one of the orbs. Oh, this is right before M'Banga goes into... Oh, by the way, we find out why there was Chinese written on... Well, we sort of find out kind of sort of why. That. Remember in Vadia 9 episode, there was Chinese written on that gate thing? And they were like, there's Chinese
what
on here.
What did you call the episode?
The planet's Vadia 9.
Oh, Vadia 9.
Yeah, what did you think I said?
I didn't quite hear you.
Okay,
so
you thought I said something dirty.
No. I honestly didn't.
Dirty.
Fuck. So there was Chinese on the thing, and we were like, why is there Chinese? But in this one, they were like, oh, there's Swahili on the thing. So, which they helped the audience out by saying, isn't that your first language? Yeah. You know,
by the way, still, I was still like, I don't really understand what's happening.
No, yeah, I didn't really.
How did it know your youth?
Yeah. It didn't explain it in the sense that we actually knew what it meant, but we know that it has something to do with bespoke, like, writing, depending on
which character is standing in front
of it. Yeah, or something. Yeah.
Okay.
So it was.
But why?
It was a little less arbitrary, but it didn't make any sense.
I don't know why.
No, I agree.
Other than to be like, whoa, that's weird.
Yeah, right.
Let's keep looking at this thing that's already interesting because it's like a little extra weirder than we thought. Like it was already weird, but like this is like super weird.
I don't get it.
You don't get it.
I don't get it.
Shoot it with a phaser.
Holograms.
Yikes.
All right. That's in order.
Right before M'Banga's like going to follow Gamble into the gateway when they're on the worship level of the arcology.
Mm-hmm. Worship level of the arcology.
Yeah, that seemed like what it was. Anyways, there must have been something kind of thing going on. Why did they even have a city if they had these great buildings? Never mind. M'Banga says, we don't need to risk all of us. I can find one of the orbs. And Una goes, no, that's an order, doctor.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it was an appropriate usage. She wasn't saying it like, I don't know what the right word here, facetiously, rhetorically. I don't know if any of those are the right words, but she didn't say it in some silly way. Like she meant it don't do that.
Don't do it.
But it was still like,
but who else is going to fucking do it?
But like, I would have been happier if she just said, I order you not to do that. I think that's the thing is I would just be happier if you were got straight to the point.
Yeah.
A normal person would be like, I order you not to do it. Like this whole, like, that's an order thing. Right. Like, it's played out.
I'm on TV. That's an order.
Yeah. It's just that you can say it some other way. Say it in a more direct way. It's been said too much. Mm-hmm. It's been said to just like
precisely,
we need to have a moratorium on this. That's an order in scripts from here on out.
Right. That's the real order.
That's the real order. Right. Unless you could have a really funny, like it's some really funny commentary on the concept of that's an order. Just get rid of it. We've used it too much. Just say I order you. Anyways. Okay. Duty or no duty. Ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. Ready, Jesse?
I'm totally ready.
Awesome.
After exhaustive evaluation, Captain Battelle has been cleared to return to active duty as the new director of the Starfleet Judge Advocate General's Office. Duty, 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 duty.
Sounds like duty.
That's a straight up big old pile of duty.
Duty.
That's a big old pike duty.
Repeat duties.
Duty.
Yeah, I agree. Wow, and Jesse even said it's a duty.
Yeah. That's a duty. That's like a real
that's
duty.
That's a
usually in the no duty.
That's
camp.
A lazy D. Duty.
Duty.
We're dangerous. Yikes.
Duty dangerous.
Sounds wonderful for the children.
I like this. I have this note here where, like, it's M'Banga says, do you believe in destiny? My note just says, nope.
Yeah, right.
Nope.
But that's the thing about, like, when you watch, I was saying earlier, when you watch a time travel story or read a time travel story, whatever you, like, consume stories, like, the whole idea of, like, time travel is about effect before cause, which implies a question about destiny. Now, I'm not saying you have to believe in it, but I mean, at least isn't just, at least it's no longer some arbitrary thing like, I believe destiny because Because I also believe in soulmates. It's like, why? But like, when you see something about cause and effect and they have all those confusing conversations about, is it really going to happen? Is you trying to prevent yourself from making this happen actually what causes you to make it happen? Like, so you can at least understand the I feel like I can understand the conversation of destiny within the realm of time travel stories.
Sure.
But this episode kind of went over the top because it also was talking about good and evil. And so when you talk about good and evil and destiny, that kind of... Like, okay, you got a story about time travel, good and evil, and destiny. Now, if it was just time travel and destiny, they would sort of glom onto each other.
Right.
But then when you throw that good and evil in there,
it's bad
the
news.
Destiny goes away from the time travel story and it gloms onto the good and evil part. And that's more the issue I have.
Because
it seems less like the crazy paradoxes of time travel, and now it's more like there's good and there's evil and there's destiny and all this nonsense, that's you know?
Yeah. And also it does seem like evil didn't ever remotely have a chance. The destiny of evil was to be very easily defeated in less than a minute or so.
Yeah, but he said some threatening shit. Like,
that was, it's about duality.
And that was the origin of evil.
No one we have ever loved is truly gone.
These things don't die easy, but when they do, they die screaming.
See, that was the extent of his evil, is to say stuff like that, also making people stab themselves in the eye. But there was never any kind of, like, nobody, at no point did I ever feel like the planet was in any, like, danger of being overthrown. I could tell some bad shit was going down, but I never felt like, oh no, this, things are getting fucked up.
And it wasn't like, not everybody stabbed their eyes out. It was like a small group of followers.
Right.
And
you kind of, silly, intense guy.
And you kind of look at them and you're like, check out this guy's mask. Are you really gonna poke your eyes out for this guy?
Yeah,
come on, what the fuck?
There was no like raining hellfire or anything like that.
Demons
not that
flying through the sky.
Yeah,
I guess that could have happened.
Yeah,
I don't know.
We sent that advance the demon back to hell.
My job is great.
Okay.
What else to say about this episode?
Let's see. Pike
what
said. Pike said in the Battelle side story. He goes about their anniversary. He goes, last year was paper. Second year is cotton. I don't know anything about this shit. I always hear about every year means something.
It's like the marriage, James.
Yeah, but like, I always thought it was like things like opal and rubies and onyx.
Down the line.
That's like, there's so many years they have mapped out.
I had no idea there was...
gold comes way down the line.
But I didn't know, like, I didn't know that, like, it got as, like, asinine as paper.
Oh, yeah. Well, by the way, it's just like everything. This is all some like fairly recently made up bullshit.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
It's like diamonds weren't a wedding ring thing until like the 1920s or 30s.
Yeah,
or
right.
Some shit.
But I mean, considering
you couldn't get that shit.
Considering that, like, you know, like I was born after this was invented, I would have thought I would have heard about this paper cotton thing already. But I should look up all of them. You're saying there's one, a different one for every fucking year. So is
there's
one
a
year,
one
is one year,
like,
year
of marriage.
Is 1 year like clementines or something?
Yeah, like
it is. You got it exactly right. It's clementines.
And feathers and
clementines.
Yeah, fifth anniversary.
Frankincense.
Is feathers. This is the 14th anniversary is season tickets to the Washington Commanders. Specifically.
All the advice from Uncle Sock really paid off.
Uncle Sock.
I thought that was kind of funny.
All of the stuff. Yeah. I loved all of the stuff inside the virtual world.
When Battelle, like, he gave her the gift, you know, and she was all like, well, he gave her the gift, and she goes.
Thought we said no gifts.
No gifts.
And then,
but
apron that like she got ordered from like Amazon.
Oh yeah. So she got him the surprise gift. She did like this jaunty little walk dance when she had the gift.
Yeah.
Watch it again. She does this she does this little funny dance.
Audience
at home.
I thought
it was hilarious.
Audience at home, just, you know, Dan is doing that dance right now.
Yeah, when she has the big thing, she's like,
doing a good job. Their interactions.
Thought we said no gifts.
Their chemistry together was great throughout the whole couple
seasons. My job is great.
That we've seen her. This was a relationship you could buy. You believed it.
I paid money for it.
Literally.
I think it was exemplified in this going through the ages as they get older and older through this montage of things. I thought they both did such a wonderful job. Again, I teared up both times watching this. It was impactful. I really enjoyed all that stuff. And the production design, again, the direction of this sequence was really, really good.
I thought it was kind of nice after like Spock goes off with Lon, like
Spocko.
Sam sits down with James, and they sit, and then it's like, oh yeah, they are all good.
Great scene. Not
that they've ever not been good, but it's always been kind of like,
you
always get
friction.
This kind of impression like James Kirk is like the achiever of the group, and Sam Kirk.
I mean,
doesn't something bad happen to Sam Kirk?
Yeah. No spoilers.
No spoilers.
No spoilers.
Yeah. We'll talk about that one later.
Let's see. Uno sits down with Pike, and Pike's all sad because Marie left and he's going to die.
Also well done, well performed.
Paley and Scotty, they're all bonding over some engineering stuff.
Cute.
Yeah. Mbenga interrupts Chapel's session with a patient to hug her, which was a nice gesture.
Well, she hugged him. He came back.
It looked like he hugged her.
I don't know. The patient looked fine.
Yeah, I'm just saying, you know, professionalism.
It is funny, though.
I think they're good friends.
The patient was sitting there on the bed and was all smiling and stuff, which was, I mean, I guess it's fine. It's just kind of funny because one thing that, like, for example, TNG was good at was, like, when there'd be a scene in sick bay, there'd be people in the background like holding their mouth like they have a toothache,
yeah, right,
or like their arm, they're all like, oh, my arm hurts because they're in sick bay.
Yeah,
they're,
he's like,
most people are in sick bay because they got themselves fucked up in somewhere.
He's like, I'm feeling fine, I had a cut but they healed it up, so I'm feeling good
they're
now.
They're like holding their guts in though.
He's like, I did some holding weird stuff on the holodeck and I got up, slashed my scrotum.
Jesse's talking about people holding their guts in, which I don't remember seeing on Star Trek, and then Patrick,
that's what I'm saying,
and then Patrick mentions slashing a scrotum open. You
they
guys,
don't do that either.
Yeah. You guys.
I think there's been a couple like holding your guts in, at least in
Star Trek. That's an order, Doctor.
Star Trek. Maybe in Deep Space Nine.
maybe
the Siege of AR 45.
Some kind of protector.
Scrotums in the news.
Oh, no.
All right. We're going to wrap things up.
Okay.
We're going to wrap it up.
I would say Una Ortegas and Uhura are having fun at the bar.
Yeah.
And Spock and Lon are meditating or something.
Yeah.
Something.
They're waiting for Kirk to knock on the door.
Yeah.
Kirk, actually.
That's the real knock.
Steve, it's not a threesome. It's Kirk and Sam show up.
Oh,
and they're like,
shit.
Hey, you got any room for some more dance students?
Who wants to get Kirked?
So.
God.
Fucking hell.
Okay. Whole new slash fiction there. It's like some sort of Kirk. Spit roasting with the Kirks.
Spit roasting. Oh god.
I apologize. I'm sorry.
Kirk roasting.
So they found a bunch of uncharted planets at the end, and Ortegas was like, it's enough for a 5-year mission. But they're already in the middle of a 5-year mission, so are they going on another 5-year mission?
Yeah, this was very series finale-y. I think people have even mentioned that they kind of wrote this like just in case.
Just in case
this could serve as a series finale. But
Who said this? Who said this?
Some kind of protector.
Who said that?
Play it again.
That's Sam Kirk.
Some kind of protector.
Yeah,
it's Sam Kirk.
Kirk.
I just mentioned that because when I listened to it, it took me a minute to like realize who that
was. It's almost a little pikish.
A little pikish.
Anything else, Dan or Jesse?
Does Captain Pike's hair get crazier every episode, or is it just sort of an illusion?
Well,
a little bit.
His hair. Did you notice his hair as old man Pike was like
a mullet. Or
yeah, like it wasn't like all duded up, but it's still crazy somehow.
It's like 70s style, like rocker.
I like this part.
You and I will remain friends.
But I thought that I know it's interchangeable, but I think shall is like the more traditionally appropriate word instead of will. It should be you and I shall remain friends. Yeah. I know it doesn't really matter.
Well, no,
but like
a Vulcan
Vulcan would say shall.
Honestly, I think I will give credit to the writers here because linguistically, at least in English, there is a slight difference.
There is a slight difference.
Will carries a little bit of the connotation of agency. Between like Spock is asserting like we're gonna be fucking friends, whereas shall almost is more like a destiny, like we'll maybe be friends, we will be friends. I think will is more assertive in this case.
I don't
case.
Know if I'm buying your explanation, to be honest.
Well, it's because we're out of time here.
I'm not arguing that you're wrong. I just don't know if I buy your explanation.
I think Captain Pike has the bigger hairbrush than Captain Patel.
Yeah,
that's Patel. Of course the more important one. Oh, that was several episodes ago when we saw their toothbrushes.
That was cute too.
The toothbrush. Yeah. Oh, word.
Good chemistry. By the way, you can write in at feedback@discussstartrek.com and give your opinion on any of the comments we had tonight, including whether shall would have been better than will. In this particular case, I did like all the Kirk Spock stuff. They've done a good job setting up
Kirk,
the character of Kirk over time. I definitely agree with some arguments that may, it doesn't need to be this much Kirk. I'm actually fairly impressed with the mechanisms they've used to get Kirk involved in the story.
Totally.
In a believable, not totally ridiculous sense.
Another example of Pike disobeying orders. He goes, Starfleet's orders are to observe and not interfere. Might not be that simple. I'm going to need to know your captain's position on that. Which is implying that he wants to disobey orders, which is in direct conflict with what he said in the documentary episode, which he said you have to follow
the propaganda episode.
But once again, I'll say maybe he was saying you have to follow orders, but because you're on, because he's on camera.
He's but like they must always follow the orders.
But like I think that's too much headcanon. I don't think that's what they just weren't consistent with the.
Agree.
That's butt.
All right. So as we wrap things up, traditionally Dan will come up with other points.
Sky Gowen isn't warp capable, but they do engage in interstellar trade with the Orions. Like where do you stand with the Prime Directive?
The Prime Directive is only the Federation. Nonsense. The Orions don't give a shit about that.
Yeah, right. But does the Federation allow to interact with them?
Yeah, and it's not about having warp. The whole point is if people have warp, then it's okay to actually make first contact.
But if they've already made
if they're already contacted, that's not your business. They're, you know, what are you going to do? You know, they already know people are out there.
I'm sorry, one last thing. M'Benga looked all disturbed when Scotty imitated Palia when he goes, we sent that Vizda back to hell. If you look, M'Benga had this weird, disturbed look on his face, and I wasn't clear what, like, that was about.
I think he's like, wait, you're making fun of this lady's accent?
Maybe that's what it was.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Because he was speaking in a funny way.
That has been It's Got Star Trek?
Has it?
It has.
Has it, though?
We don't know what we're talking about next week, but it'll be something fun.
It'll be something super fun.
But will it, though?
Maybe we'll talk about the Star Trek Scouts. Maybe we'll pick an episode using Dan's algorithm. But keep an eye on the social media at It's Got Star Trek. We'll let you know what we're going to talk about.
Maybe we'll be dead.
There was a lot of no's in this episode.
Dan will play some no's.
No. No. No.
No.
No.
And
no. No. No.
No way.
Social media at It's Got Star Trek website. It'sgotstartrek.com. Patreon/It's Got Star Trek if you want to
don't be too sure
here's some goofy behind the scenes stuff and other fun stuff that we throw up there from time to time.
That's eerie.
YouTube,
so fragile.
YouTube,
stop it.
Facebook, all that jazz. You can find us all over the place,
every place.
Like a steel trap.
That was season 3 of Strange New Worlds. Well, maybe we'll have some more comment on the overall season at another time. That's another possible
maybe.
What?
But until then, we wish you all the best. Goodbye.
And no one we have ever loved is truly gone.
Bacon's burning. Hold on.
Out on the frontier, out in the cosmic dust, riding steel stallions and planets we trust. Came a man named Gary with stars in his eyes. But power twisted him as he reached for the skies. From peaceful explorer to a god gone bad, he could bend the universe, made old Jim so sad. Eyes glowing silver and his grip iron tight. Commander's law took a turn one fateful night. I'm not jokingly about old Gary Mitchell. Once a friend, now a legend and a riddle. His power grew too strong, wild and free. I'm not jokingly about what he used to be. We shared a lot of mild, strange, and starlit fights. But as his powers grew, I lost him to the knights. From Alpha Centauri to the cold of outer space, we saw the man behind the god, tears on his face. But mercy was an option for Mitchell's hand. As he sought to rule and conquer, we made a stand. With stones and steel, we fought till the end. Goodbye, Gary, you were more than just a friend. I'm not jokingly about old Gary Mitchell. Once a friend, now a legend and a riddle. His power grew too strong, wild and free. I'm not jokingly about what he used to be. I'm not jokingly about old Gary Mitchell. Once a friend, now a legend and a riddle. His power grew too strong, wild and free. I'm
not jokingly about what he used to be. Oh, what he used to be.